one more piece of technology I had to take care of. So, please, if you would introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about Alaska Metal Mines.
Sure. So my name is Karen Mathias, and I've been working with Alaska Metal Mines for over 10 years. The organization itself has actually been around for 31 years. We started in 1992, and it formed because the large metal mines in Alaska wanted to have a unique voice on issues that matter to their particular interests and facilities. So we spend most of our attention looking just at state issues, less for federal or outside of Alaska, but we really want to connect people to the minerals that they use in their daily lives, how much comes from Alaska and how much we have in terms of our resources, and also work with legislators and policymakers to make sure that we have, you know, efficient processes so that the mines can operate and produce those minerals safely, in an environmentally responsible way, and in a way that benefits Alaskans through all kinds of different ways, from, you know, direct jobs to community partnerships to other things. So I'm really looking forward to talking to you about mining in Alaska over the next little while.
Right. That'll be good. We do need to learn more about mining. Mining over the decades, I guess, has changed quite a bit. This is not the same industry that was mining in 1849. So, yeah. And then you specifically said that you represent the large metal mines, and there's another outfit, Alaska Mining Association. What's the distinction between the Council of Producers and the Miners Association?
Yeah, many of your listeners may be familiar with the Alaska Miners Association. They have a branch in Fairbanks that's really active, which isn't surprising because, you know, you've got two large metal mines near Fairbanks, Fort Knox and the Pogo Mine, which is a little further away. And then, of course, there's the coal mine, Yucca Valley Coal Mine, but also a lot of placer mining. So those are the smaller operations. Mm-hmm. And the Alaska Miners Association represents all of that broad industry, all the way from placer miners and junior exploration companies to the contractors, all the way up to the big mines. And Alaska Metal Mines just focuses on the large mines and some of the advanced projects. So we work really closely together, but we each have our own sort of place in representing mining in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you mentioned that we have three large mines within the interior, if you will, the Yucca Valley Coal Mine, Fort Knox Mine, and the Pogo Mine down by Delta Junction that are currently operating. And how about other mining activity throughout the state of Alaska? How many are up and running, and how many are trying to get going?
Right. So there's five large metal mines in Alaska right now operating. And so in addition to Pogo and Fort Knox near Fairbanks, we've got the Red Dog Mine, which is up near Kotzebue in the Northwest Arctic Borough. And that's a large zinc mine. They also produce silver and lead. It's a partnership between Teck Alaska and NANA, one of the Alaska Native Regional Corporations. And then there are two mines down in southeast, very close to Juneau. One of them is Greens Creek, which is, they call it a polymetallic, so they produce a number of different metals, mostly silver, but they also have zinc, lead, gold, and a little bit of copper. And both Greens Creek and Red Dog have been operating since 1989, so they're our oldest mines. You mentioned that things have changed a lot, and it's not like it used to be in the 1800s or even the early half of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. we've got, you know, our oldest large mines are in their early 30s. And so they were all developed and designed under all the modern environmental laws like the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act and things like that. Mm-hmm. And we're really proud of the way that they've been able to operate really, really effectively and responsibly in those 3 decades and have a lot of benefits for their communities. And then we have our newest large mine, which, you know, is Kensington, which is an underground gold mine also near Juneau. And it started in 2010, which is kind of sad. You know, we haven't had a new mine open up in 13 years. So really hoping that we can see some of our exciting projects become mines in the not too distant future. Some of those projects are Donlin, which is a large gold project in the Yukon-Kuskokwim. Pebble, of course, everybody has heard of down in South Central. And there's also the Palmer project, which is another polymetallic. They would produce copper, gold, a number of different minerals, also some zinc, some silver, and it's near Haines. And then there's the Ambler area. Some people may have heard of the Ambler Access Road that is being permitted right now. It has a number of projects within that Upper Kobuk, you know, mining district. Mm-hmm. Much of the projects would be lead with copper, but there's also zinc and gold and silver, and also cobalt, which is kind of an interesting mineral to talk about when we talk about U.S. dependency on other places for our minerals that we need for our electronics and things like that. Mm-hmm. So there's some exciting possibilities with cobalt in the north. Mm-hmm. And then also back to come right back around towards Fairbanks, there's Livengood, which is you know just down the road,
right.
And it's a gold project, and is you know working on optimizing their plan to find a way to economically produce gold in that area.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And looks like we're coming up on a quarter past the hour, so we'll take a short break, a couple-minute break, for some news and some words from our sponsors. So if you'd stay with us, we will be right back.
Sure, will do.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
The Valdez Fishing Report, brought to you by Frontier Supply Company on Van Horn Road, the only Alaska-owned full-line wholesale distributor of plumbing, heating, industrial piping, waterworks, and mining products for over 30 years. Sure, they're big enough to handle the supply needs of pipelines and gold mines, but they're personable enough to help you with your needs as well. Frontier Supply Company, for all of your plumbing and heating needs, on Van Horn Road, online at frontiersupply.com. That's Frontier Supply Company.
It's time for the Valdez Fishing Report. Interviews, derby standings, tips, and advice for Prince William Sound.
No.
Yeah, so, LaVon, you caught a 14.5 4-pound silver salmon. What was the action like? Did you pick up a lot of silvers? You know, everyone's wondering this time of year, where are they? Are they in thick?
We put the line in the water at 8:30 in the morning and started fishing. And then at 5 minutes after 11 is when I landed this big boy, the last fish of the day, the 12th fish, you know, because it was my husband getting 6 fish and me getting 6
fish. Well, 12 fish in a day is a pretty good day.
Well, it wasn't even a day. It wasn't even a half a day. It was just from 8:30 till 5 after 11.
So I'd say fishing's good.
So fishing was very, very good, yes. Very, very wonderful salmon fishing down here,
well,
for sure.
Obviously 14.54 pound silver, a good one. Any other sizable fish?
Oh, yeah, well, not of the silver salmon. No.
They all look like babies next to that one?
Yes, right.
Park your rig, pitch a tent, or check into our private cabins at Eagles Rest RV Park. Then explore Valdez. Eagles Rest RV Park and Cabins is a perfect place to land. Book RV sites, glamping tents, and cabins online at EaglesRestRV.com. We now accept online reservations for our tent area, so the sooner you book, the better. EaglesRestRV.com.
KVAK's Valdez Fishing Report. Fish Valdez and reel in a big one.
KFAR weather.
Chance for scattered rain showers today, otherwise cloudy. High of 62, winds out of the southeast around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy skies tonight, chance for scattered rain showers, lows around 52. Overcast skies tomorrow, chance for scattered showers, 67. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
And we are back. Thank you for staying with us. And be sure and tell the sponsors that you heard about them on KFAR. And this is Mike Prox. I'm filling in for David Prues. And with me this morning is Karen Mathias. She's the executive director of the Council of Alaska Producers. And we've been chatting about the mining activity in Alaska and the various large-scale mines that are throughout the state. And, of course, the one that's going to be on everybody's mind in Fairbanks is the Manh Choh Project. And Karen, can you give us a little information about that project?
Sure. We just didn't have time right before the break, so I'm glad that we moved it to now to give it a little bit more. So Manh Choh is going to be our newest producing mine. They've just started construction. They're fully permitted and will likely start producing next year. And that's a joint venture between Kinross and Contango, and it's on land that's owned by the native village of Tetland, so just outside of Tok. It has the potential for up to 500 jobs, and a lot of money will be invested in Tetland and in the region. Pretty exciting news. I was just on their website yesterday looking at the brand new trucks that Black Gold, a local family-owned company in the interior, is going to be running. They, they're the newest technology. They've got a lot of safety options and ways to ensure that the trucks are operated both efficiently and safely. So it's something that I think is really, really interesting to see this partnership with the Native Village of Tetland, what that means for people down there, and also obviously opportunities for businesses in the interior and in Alaska to be able to do business with another new mine.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and they I did see the picture of the new trucks and. Boy, they do have a lot of axles, and the trucking part of that has caused some consternation in the community, to put it mildly. And one of the things there's no disagreement about, I guess, the Fort Knox, Kinross, is saying that this is going to be a 5-year plan for trucking, that they anticipate, I guess, exhausting the resource in 5 years. And others think that this is going to go on and on and on. And I can imagine that Kinross hopes that they find more ore bodies as they did with the Fort Knox mine and that it will go on and on and on. But there's a reason about why companies have to talk about specific things in the metal industry, in the mining industry. They don't, what might be the difference between those who anticipate that it'll go on for a long time and the current plan of the statement of 5 years. Do you know anything about that?
Right. So I should start off by saying that, you know, the best information is going to come from Kinross because they are the experts and they're working on the project. And I know that they have, you know, some really, really good information on their website. You just have to Google Mon Cho and you'll find it. But yes, when you talk about, you know, how companies can talk about their reserves and mine life, any publicly traded company is required to, you know, report things accurately by the you know, the exchange Securities Exchange Commissions or the stock exchange that they're listed on. So they can't, you know, there's very specific definitions about what they report. But it's also true that, you know, you can't know how much ore body is there without doing, you know, a lot of exploration and actually starting to produce. And so while many mines have invested heavily in exploration, you know, even after they're producing, in order to expand their ore body and continue their mine life and have been successful in doing that, sometimes an ore body is simply the size that is expected when the mine first goes into operation. You know, the geology is always very unique, and you know, nobody knows exactly what's underground until you get under there. So, you know, what happens in terms of mine life is really up to the geologists to determine and the companies to determine if what they find is economical to produce. Because you know, if you get into lower grades, sometimes it just isn't possible.
Right.
So they're very, you know, they know what they have right now. They've got a plan for that they've announced, and then, you know, any changes would have to wait until they had, you know, more information and confidence, and we'll wait and see.
Yeah, and it's important for the public to realize that the difference. There's a perception that Kinross is being deceptive about the life of the mine, but they're actually regulated, and I don't want to use the word hindered, but they're accountable to the SEC, and they have to be honest with their investors and not promote something that is highly speculative and say that we're going to be here for 30 years or whatever. They talk about what they do know so that the investors can make a informed and reliable decision. And that's, it is 5 years from the perspective, if you want to invest in that mine, you should think about 5-year production life, because that's all that they have discovered and confirmed is producible at this time. And if you're optimistic, you know, hopefully it does continue on. That's just great. But it is all they can talk about right now. And that is the length of the permit that they have for that mine from, DEC and the EPA. So that is the difference between the 5 years and those that think it's going to go on longer. But in that area, there is hundreds of thousands of acres under lease by various companies, and I hope they find something there and that the whole area develops more. That's down the road. That might change lots of things. If there was enough minerals down there for somebody to open up a mill, then that would solve the traffic problem that has everybody concerned right now. Do you know, do you have any information that you can share about activity in that area? What is going on for exploration, various companies?
I don't actually, because my membership is limited to the producing mines and then some of the advanced projects that are, you know, close to development. Mm-hmm. There is, you know, there are dozens of exploration projects going on around the state. And, it, you know, it's always really important for people to understand, you know, we always hope that they'll be successful in finding a rich deposit that's feasible to develop. But that's not always the case. Alaska is remote. You know, we have infrastructure challenges. We have high energy costs. There's many, many reasons why a project may not become a mine, and so it's important to keep that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
We've put over the last three decades, companies have invested billions of dollars into exploration in dozens of projects around the state, and you know, yet we have five large metal mines.
Right. Yes, they don't all pan out.
Exactly.
Right.
So. You know, we're encouraged by the interest in exploration. There was a good summer field season this year. You know, commodity prices are doing pretty well, and that means that it's easier to raise investment dollars and convince people to invest in projects.
Mm-hmm.
That's always, you know, one of the biggest challenges they have is getting the money to be able to do the geological surveys and the drilling. And then also, you know, the hope that they're actually going to be able to, you know, find a resource that that is big enough that it justifies, you know, going further and doing more, you know, more deeper exploration or with more advanced equipment or technology to see if they can then build. You know, the feasibility to move forward and continue to get investment to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the reasons these things take time.
Yep.
And the permitting also is a whole nother level of time to make sure it's done right.
We got to hold that thought for just a little bit. I hear the music in the background, and that means a satellite is coming overhead, and it's going to take over the program so we can get some national news, weather, and some commercial announcements. So if you stay with us, we will pick up the conversation in just a few minutes. You're listening to KFAR, and we will be right back.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Looking at one of the most famous mugshots ever, a former President Donald Trump. He's promoting it on social media after he surrendered to the Fulton County Jail last night for election interference charges in Georgia. Republican candidate, former U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, on the Fox News channel, now making assumptions about the case.
First of all, we shouldn't assume that he's going to be convicted. And the second thing is, we shouldn't assume that he's going to be the nominee.
First ever mugshot of a former U.S. president. Trump's facing other indictments also. In Maui County, Hawaii, they've got a list out of names of over 300 people who are still unaccounted for since those wildfires. The police chief, John Pelletier, says they're doing everything they can to find those who remain unaccounted for.
This is not an easy thing to do, but we want to make sure that we are doing everything we can possibly to make this investigation the most complete, thorough.
America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Alaska State Troopers will increase patrols on the state's highways through Labor Day weekend, according to a news release from the law enforcement agency. The Fairbanks Daily News Minor reports while troopers will focus on DUI enforcement for both alcohol and drugs, they will also watch for aggressive driving, distracted driving, speeding, and people not wearing their seatbelts, the release stated. If you plan to drink or use drugs, make sure you have a designated driver, a taxi, or a ride-sharing service to get you home safely, Colonel Maurice Hughes, director of the Alaska State Troopers, said in the release. Troopers will be conducting increased patrols throughout the holiday weekend to enforce the law and protect the public. Enjoy the holiday responsibly and help us keep our roads safe. The 2023 Impaired Driving National Enforcement Mobilization, Drive Sober or Get Pulled Over, went into effect across the country on August 17th and runs through September 5th. Motorists witnessing other drivers driving dangerously are encouraged to make a ready report, that is, report every dangerous driver immediately by calling 911.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
The change of season means it's time for a change of equipment at Craig Taylor. The Honda lineup of snowblowers is ready for whatever winter brings. The Honda snowblowers at Craig Taylor include tracked or wheeled options with gas or electric power. Your new Honda snowblower will clear 32 inches with a throwing distance 56 feet. New stock is coming in now, so buy off the floor or reserve yours today. Craig Taylor Equipment, South Cushman at Van Horn.
Are you ready for the ride of your life? Midnight Sun ATV Tours can get you there. Your adventure begins in their brand new Can-Am side-by-side and takes you through the trails and hills off of Chino Hot Springs. This tour is custom tailored for the adventurist who's looking for a pure adrenaline rush. Midnight Sun ATV Tours is the ultimate place to play in your own backyard. Midnight Sun ATV Tours, give them a call 987-3331 or online at midnightsunatvtours.com.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
And we are back. Thank you for staying with us. And this is Mike Prox filling in for David Prus on KFAR's Problem Corner, 660 AM, 97.5 FM. And my guest this morning is Karen Mathias of the Alaska Metal Mines, which is a new name. I had forgotten about that. And did you notice the bumper music leading into the news was heavy metal music, which is appropriate for this program? So that was good. That was a good coincidence. But we had been talking about the process that's involved with permitting a mine. You don't just go out, stick a shovel in the ground, find whatever you're looking for, and press on. It takes years of exploration and further exploration and development and thinking. And roughly, is there some sort of a, I don't know if there's a standard or an average, but a rough timeline of how long it takes to assess after discovery, assess the mine and figure out whether it's worth following through and going through the permitting process and et cetera?
That is a really good question, and the answer that anybody in the industry would tell you is too long. You know, I think some people think that there's some exploration done and a discovery, and then the next thing you know, you have a mine, and it's really not that simple. As you mentioned, it is a multi-year process. There's many agencies involved at the federal, state, and local level. There's no guarantee that those permits will be issued and that the company will be able to move forward. And unfortunately, you know, we have found that things have gotten slower and slower at the federal level for years now because of their land management policies and then delays in processing permitting. The United States is consistently ranked at the bottom of the global scale, along with like Papua New Guinea, for how long it takes to get through the federal permitting process, and it's not because our standards are so high that it, and that's why we take so long. Because there's other countries like Canada and Australia that can do their version of the big NEPA process, the Environmental Policy Act process. It can take them 2 to 3 years, and in the United States, it can be 6, 7, even 10 years. And so, you know, it makes us less competitive, which is a real challenge. And then on the other side as well, you mentioned, you know, there's early exploration, and then there's you know, more, you know, if they're successful in locating, you know, what look like good prospects, then they start to do, you know, they need, often the early exploration is, you know, in the low millions of dollars, but then they need tens of millions in order to do more drilling, more geological surveys, and determine, you know, what, you know, what kind of body it is, how high the grade is, and then they do often economic analysis, pre-feasibility study, a feasibility study, and these things all take time as well. Meanwhile, they're also doing all of the environmental research so that they have baseline numbers, so that they can, you know, be able to show. Monitor water quality and fish habitat and all the important things that, you know, need to be monitored closely and inspected to make sure that the mine is operating in a safe manner environmentally.
Mm-hmm. And that has advanced quite a bit. Let's see, I think was it 1972, the Clean Water Act? I can't remember when, but long time ago. And, of course, that imposed more permitting requirements, but the mining industry has changed quite a bit, even since, as you said, the 50s, that mining is much more thoroughly researched and there's less environmental impact. But what sort of things do mining companies take into consideration to address those concerns?
Right, you're absolutely right that you know, modern mining looks nothing like the historic mining of Alaska's past. All of those environmental studies and analyses that take place up front, and we've been really clear as an industry, like we're not pushing for any kind of reduction in regulation or standards. What we want to see is efficiency, and not at the expense of quality. But we think that, you know, we should always be looking at best practices and new technologies and, you know, finding ways to do things or go through the process more efficiently and quickly. And, you know, unfortunately on the federal side, that really, you know, it hasn't happened. But I just want to make it really clear that, you know, when we talk about permitting reform, we're not talking about making it weaker. We're talking about making it, you know, smarter.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly,
mm-hmm.
Here in Alaska, water quality is definitely, you know, one of the most important aspects.
Right.
For mining to get right, and that's why they do a lot of work up front on environmental studies and, you know, understanding, you know, as much as possible about the water and aquatic environment. And in Alaska, we actually do more than many, many other jurisdictions worldwide, because once the mine is in operation, we don't just monitor the water quality, but we also look at the, you know, the insect life and the microorganisms and the environment that, you know, the fish rely on. So it's a much deeper level of assessment than in many other mining jurisdictions, but it's not surprising because, you know, Alaska has, you know, tremendous fish resources, and we all as Alaskans want to make sure that that they are healthy and successful, and we're pretty proud that mining and fishing do coexist, and we've got great examples of that in our existing, you know, operating mines.
Mm-hmm.
And also the mines have taken on conservation projects to improve fish habitat in and around you know, their areas. And Fort Knox has a great example.
Mm-hmm.
Of rehabilitation of Fish Creek, which wasn't even on their property. It wasn't like their responsibility,
right.
But they worked with the Department of Fish and Game to rehabilitate an area that was impacted by historic placer mining.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it was an impaired water body, and now, after the work that they did, it's, you know, it's no longer listed as impaired, and they've got Arctic grayling that are, you know, doing really well in Fish Creek. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, we have quite a few examples like that.
Yes, and it's interesting. It's difficult for the public to see that because it is, it's just now part of what you would have guessed would have been there for hundreds of years. But you have to have, I flew over the area in the 70s. We did a lot of flying north of here, and there was lots of scars, if you will, from prior mining practices. There's even a dredge just a little bit, I don't know if it's on Fish Creek exactly, I can't remember, but there's a dredge in that area that had operated. And in the 70s, you could certainly tell that a dredge had been through there. But most of that now is kind of indistinguishable from the rest of the area. And the part, oh nuts, I forgot the name of the mine across the Steese Highway from Fort Knox, that is now closed and given back to the state. And you have to know that something was there to tell that something was there. To the casual observer, you couldn't tell that a mine had really been there. So there is a lot of focus on that. And I worked in the oil industry for about 30 years, and there was a lot of improvement in the oil industry. And one of the things that you hate to do anything different. Whenever we're doing something, we don't want to be asked to do something else. But it took a while. But in the oil industry, they kind of discovered that if we just plan all of these things into our work, the safety measures and the environmental protection measures and whatnot, it isn't necessarily a show-stopping expense. And sometimes projects work better. I remember one that we did the topping unit turnaround. It's every 3 years they take a topping unit down, and they give us a month to do all our work and get it back online. And then some regulations came out where we couldn't inject the water back into the pipeline, which we use a lot of water and on the tens of thousands of gallons. But we just made a real effort to plan that project out and reduce the amount of water that we used and the amount of waste that we generated. And in the end, we spent more time and money planning, but we were done under budget and 3 days ahead of schedule because we thought everything through better. So it was a real good lesson in doing the job right is not necessarily more expensive, and we take it in stride. And I'm seeing that also in Fort Knox. I've visited that a few times, and in other mines. The Usabelli coal mine has got many areas that they have reclaimed, and you wouldn't even know that they were there. So that's good.
Absolutely, and that mine you're thinking of near Fort Knox, you're thinking of True North.
True North, yes.
Fully reclaimed,
yeah.
And you know, certified by the state in 2020. And I don't know if we have time before the next break, but I'd like to talk a little bit about what's required for reclamation and how much of that is decided up front before the mine ever starts construction.
Sure.
Because I think it's really important.
All right. Well, it is that time. Let's take a quick break for some commercial messages, and then we will be right back. So stay with us. And this is KFAR, and I'm speaking with Karen Mathias about the Alaska metal mine. So stick with us.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Staples has big savings on everything for back to school or stocking up the office. Save on tech for the classroom or your business with up to $250 off select computers. And save on signs, banners, and posters from Staples Print and Marketing Services. Plus, right now at Staples, you can save even more with $50 off your print order of $150 or more. Get everything for the office and the classroom for less at Staples. Print offer ends 8/26. Visit staples.com/print for details. Tech offer ends 9/16. In-store only. See associate for details.
Ask Sherwin-Williams and get 35% off Emerald products and Super Deck stains August 25th through the 28th. That means 35% off our most popular color family, blue. Psychologists have found it to be soothing and relaxing, which makes it especially great for bedrooms and bathrooms. And of course, get 35% off all of our other colors. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
With stores in Anchorage, Wasilla, North Pole, Fairbanks, and throughout North America, Glass Doctor is your locally owned and operated solution when you need a windshield. With our G12 Road Hazard Guarantee, you get 1 year peace of mind, knowing we will fix or replace your windshield if it gets damaged or broken for free in Alaska, where they put rocks on the road like on purpose. It's practically a buy one, get one free kind of a deal, and only at Glass Doctor.
Call the Glass Doctor, we'll fix your pains.
Weather brought to you by GCR. Maintaining your correct tire pressure improves safety, fuel economy, and tire life. Drop by the Tire Guys for free tire inflation. GCR Tires and Service, taming the Alaskan road. Van Horn at Cushman.
KFAR. Weather.
Chance for scattered rain showers today. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. Highs level off around 62. Southeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Overcast skies tonight. Chance for scattered showers. Lows level off around 52. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow. Chance for scattered showers. High temperatures reach up to 67. And that's your weather on KFAR, 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
And we are back. Thank you to our sponsors for making this show possible. And if you go in to visit, check them out. Let them know you heard about it on KFAR. And this is Mike Prox. I'm filling in for David Prus. My guest this morning is Karen Mathias from the Alaska Metal Mines. And we're talking about kind of large-scale mining in Alaska. And I do have a caller on the phone. Karen, are you ready for a phone call?
Absolutely.
Okay. Good morning. You're on KFAR. And who am I speaking with?
Good morning. This is Al.
Mr. Al, what's up?
I have a question or two for your guest. I'm curious, with your experience with the state and the different agencies, do you feel that the state is promoting large mine development or is really hindering it through bureaucracy and regulations and costs?
That's a great question, and you know I can't tell you how appreciative we are of Governor Dunleavy and his support for mining in Alaska. You know, he spent time up in the Northwest Arctic Borough, and he really got to know Red Dog and the mine up there. His three daughters work or have worked at Red Dog, and he really gets it. And you know, we couldn't ask for, you know, somebody in that position who better understands our industry and wants to see mining be, you know, part of economic diversity in Alaska. When it comes to the state regulators, you know, I mentioned some of the federal challenges that we have. And in general, on the state side, you know, we know what's needed and we get it done. We have good working relationships with the regulators. For years now, they've had this office of managing large projects, and it's kind of a one-stop shop for managing the state permitting. And, you know, I can't say enough about how helpful it is to have, like, one point person in the state to help, you know, communicate and work with the different agencies. You know, there's always things that can be improved, and we certainly have our list of legislative priorities of things that, you know, we think would make things more efficient and better and attract more investment to Alaska. But in general, you know, when it comes to permitting, it's on the federal side that things are more uphill.
Yeah, I understand. Well, I really appreciate that. I just thought I'd ask that and see if maybe the state was kind of somewhat of a hindrance or a roadblock to any kind of new development, which sometimes happens in different industries.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what the state's customer service motto is, including the legislature, by the way. We're not happy until you're not happy.
All right. We'll leave that at that for the weekend. Thank you.
Very good. Thanks a lot, Al. I have to do a shout-out. Commissioner Jason Bruni decided to go on to other things, but he was the commissioner for DEC for the last, 4 years, I guess. And he really had a good approach. He was concerned about doing things right and doing it efficiently so we can make sure that it's going to work right, but we're not holding things up unnecessarily. And I just think they've done a pretty good job over the last several years, and I wanted to thank Commissioner Bruni for his service.
I'm glad you said that. I completely agree.
Yep. He was great. Fun to talk to. Let's see. The other question, of course, is, does mining pay its own way? And that would be relative to the state, or how much, to what degree does mining? What are the taxes and different considerations revenue-wise for the state?
Sure. There's a lot to mention there. First of all, in terms of developing mines, Alaska obviously is we have a lot of remote areas. We don't get to choose where those deposits are, and they often are not close to roads and ports. And the mining companies have invest hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, into infrastructure in order to build the mine. Pogo is a good example. They built a 50-mile road onto the site and the transmission line. Fortunately, they're on the grid, so they're able to work with GVEA for the power. But those are pretty big infrastructure investments. Down in Southeast, it was the mining industry way back 100 years ago that started up the first hydroelectric power stations.
Mm-hmm.
And while they've been obviously modernized in that 100 or so years, they're still using some of the facilities that were initially built by the mining industry to provide hydroelectricity and clean and cheaper energy source for the city of Juneau, as well as for mining and other industries. So in general, I'm pretty proud of the way that mining, pays for the infrastructure that's necessary to be able to operate. And then in terms of what do they give back, we can look at it from the point of view of the workforce and living locally. You've got Fort Knox so close that people are able to live in Fairbanks or North Pole and drive to and from work every day. The other large mines are more remote, and so they do have camp operations where people go in for 1, 2, 3 weeks and then have time off. And so that is a different type of operation. But the many of them live in local communities or in South Central, and so they're buying their homes, they're paying property taxes, they're part of the community, they're your neighbors, whether it's somebody you see at church or on the PTA or at the grocery store. There's also the impact on local businesses. The mines make a huge effort to buy local,
mm-hmm.
and for example, Fort Knox. Spent almost $300 million, $293 million, with 327 Alaska companies last year, and a lot of those are in the interior. They have 713 employees last year and 84 contractors. And Pogo, a little bit smaller, but almost as many employees, 610. They spent over $200 million with 164 Alaska companies. So, really making that effort. To ensure that the dollars that are generated from mining in Alaska, are recycled and circling in the Alaska economy by helping out, small and medium sized businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the taxes to the state. All mines pay the Alaska mining license tax, which is a percentage, and the large mines pay at the highest level. They pay corporate tax to the state and to the federal government. They also pay fuel tax. And then if they're on state land, they pay royalty. Obviously, if they're on Native Corporation land, then they pay the royalty to the Native Corporation. All told, in 2022, there was $131 million that went to the state government. And almost all of that goes to the general fund and then is used, you know, is available for things like schools and highways and airports. So we're pretty proud of that contribution. Then there's the local taxes. Mines are the largest property taxpayers in Fairbanks, mm-hmm. And in Northwest Alaska. There's $55 million paid in local tax revenue last year. And then the royalty payments to Alaska Native corporations for mining on their land is then shared amongst all of the Native corporations, first the regional and then down to the village level. So all the shareholders of Native corporations, receive some benefit predominantly from the royalty payments made by Red Dog, because that's, been a significant amount, $1.8 billion since 1989 mm-hmm. has been shared. So lots of different ways. And then there's the community partnerships like charity giving and working with the university, things like that.
Mm-hmm. And the benefit to the budget, the state budget, isn't as obvious from what we get from the oil industry, but it all adds up. And mm-hmm. and that's kind of the way a economy and a society normally works, is a bunch of little things all add up. And they certainly do make more of a contribution than I think at times mines are given credit for. You mentioned just the direct payments to businesses. That doesn't count the payroll, most of which gets spent locally, like any other any other job, and that's just a huge amount and makes the whole community work. Well, we've got about a minute left. So, and we didn't talk about critical minerals and the importance of metal mining to this energy transition. So can you sum up a subject that takes 4 hours to discuss in about a minute?
Sure, I'll do my best. Tell me to stop when I run out of time.
We'll hear the music.
So critical minerals are the minerals that the U.S. needs and doesn't necessarily have enough of locally and is reliant on other countries to produce for us. And we've got, the F-35 has 900 pounds of rare earth elements, and almost all of those come from China. Yep. So when it comes to national security and our economy, because of electronics and the renewables, we need minerals and metals, and why shouldn't we be doing it, mining in the U.S. and, having that security?
All right. And we are out of time. Thank you for listening, and tune in again tomorrow and KFAR's Problem Corner.
As an inflation fight continues, but they're not ruling out a need for more hikes.
We are attentive to signs that the economy may not be cooling as expected. So far this year, GDP growth has come in above expectations and above its longer run trend. And recent readings on consumer spending have been especially robust.
Fed Chair Jay Powell at an annual gathering in Wyoming, Fox